Parshas Chukas, although the two main themes to most of us is the idea of Paraduma and the Mei Meriva, sprinkled around through the Parsha, there's quite a few references to Torah, quite a few important references to Torah. For example, the Parsha has a pasuk Adam Ki Yomas Ba'Oil. That's the whole idea of Tumas Oil. And the Gemara makes a drasha, Ein HaTorah Miskayim Ela Misha Mei Mas'atz Me'ela. Torah only has any form of existing or lasting, someone who kills himself over the Torah. So it was bothering me. That's a very important idea in learning, don't get me wrong. But why here? Why in Parashas Chukas? You want to allude to the fact that you have to kill yourself over learning. We mentioned in the Chumash here, a story with Reb Gifter. Reb Gifter was trying to get a hold of a certain wealthy fellow to raise money. And every single time he tried to catch the fellow, he was always busy. So Reb Gifter finally caught him. And he told Reb Gifter, I work all the time. So he said, my life is my business. So Reb Gifter thought that was such a great line, he just applied it to learning. The Torah is my life. Instead of business is my life, Torah is my life. He brought that back to the boys to mechanech them with that idea. But why teach us here in Parshas Chukas? We could have learned it in Parshas Beshalach, in Yisroi, wherever the Torah talks about, the mitzvahs of Torah. Why over here? So I was thinking perhaps the Torah is teaching us a valuable lesson, because what's the Parsha Adam Ki Yomas Ba'Oil? You have a huge room, huge, massive room. And there could be hundreds and thousands of people in the room. And one person dies Nebuch in the room. So everyone in the room becomes Tommy. Everyone in the room. There could be a big, big building, a massive stadium, and one person dies, the entire room is affected by the tumah. That's the power of tumas oil. So maybe the Torah is telling us the same way midas toivis are meruba midas praniyos. So if something like tumah is so affected like that, so kol shekein positive is going to have that impact. So if you have a big room and one person is learning Torah, so that Torah is going to impact the entire room. The same way the tumah impacts the entire room, so to the positive will impact the entire room. So just like tumah in an oil has such a negative impact, it makes everyone tummy, so the Torah that's learned in a room or in any room has an impact on the entire room. A person sits in his shul and he learns, he sits in his house and he learns, it has an impact on his entire house, on the entire community, on an entire city, whatever it may be. Because the same way the tumah has an impact, perhaps so too the Torah has the same impact, if not greater, to do good as opposed to tumah, which has a negative effect. Then there's the famous Gemara at the end of the parasha. It says in the parasha the word Vahev Besufa. So the Gemara in Kedusha makes a drasha that if you have a father and a son and a Rebbe and a Talmud that are learning together, so while they're learning, they're enemies. They're screaming at each other and they're yelling at each other and they're arguing on each other. But it's Vahev Besufa. At the end, they're the best of friends. So that's the famous story with the Chassam Sofer. When the Chassam Sofer gave his bar mitzvah pshatel at 13, so he quoted from one of his grandfathers, and he argued on his grandfather. He said, my grandfather said this pshat, I think it's not the pshat, and he gave his own pshat. So at the end of his pshatel, his father came over to him and gave him a big smack after his pshatel. He said, ah, chutzpah, who are you to argue on the Zayda? You're a 13-year-old boy. The Zayda was a big Talmud Chacham. So the Chassam Sofer's Rebbe, Reb Nosson Adler, came over and said, no, he's right. The Zayda was wrong, the boy is right. And then Reb Nosson Adler decided that the Chassam Sofer can't live in his house anymore, it's dangerous. He's never going to grow in learning. Every time he's going to argue, he's going to bring up a point of learning. His father's going to smack him. He's going to have a kasha nashi, his father's going to smack him, he's going to have a kasha nashis. So Reb Nosson Adler, adopted, so to say, the Chassam Sofer, and took him at the young age of 13. He moved into Reb Nosson Adler's house, and he traveled with Reb Nosson Adler, because that's not the way we grow in learning. Obviously, we're supposed to disagree respectfully, but that's the whole beauty of learning, is we're supposed to argue. The beauty of Torah is disagreeing, obviously respectfully. So Reb Chatzkel Abramsky said, why is it that people argue so strongly in learning? Assuming you're doing it for the right reasons, not just to prove your chavrusa wrong. So he says, because the Torah is a part of who you are. If I'm learning Pshat and Rashi, Rashi's a part of me. And if I think you're botching up the Rashi, so it's like you're ripping a part of me away. You're destroying a part of my essence. I can't let it sit back and just let it happen. So we get so adamant, we get so angry about the Torah, and therefore we argue about learning. So again, it's in this week's parasha. This week's parasha, Parshas Chukas, the Torah is giving us another idea of how we're supposed to learn. We're supposed to tumble in learning, we're supposed to disagree in learning, fight in learning. The Chassam Sofer says that there's a certain amount of fighting that has to be brought into this world. There's going to be fight. But he writes, if we fight in learning, we take away the fights from other areas. He says, that's Pshat the Pasuk, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom. Why do Talmidei Chachamim make peace? If you think about it, they only make trouble. Why? Because they make everything into a machlokes. So he says, no, because a machlokes in Torah takes away a machlokes to something else. If we're fighting about how to learn a Rashi, we're not going to fight about something else, about a parking spot. We're not going to fight about who should open the store. Because there's a certain amount of machlokes in the world. If we use it for Torah, it won't be used for other things. So he says, that's why Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom, because they make peace. Because if we're fighting about Torah, we won't be fighting about other things. So Rav Shechter tells over that a few years ago, there was a group of cardinals who came to YU to check out how things work. a group of cardinals from France, because they were having troubles in France working their college, their process of getting guys to want to join. It's a bit of a hard sell. You tell a guy, you got to join our religion, you got to become a cardinal, you got to become a priest, you can't get married. That's already a very difficult sell. But they were trying to figure out why their theory is not working. So they came to YU, and they went around, walking around the yeshiva. And they were watching one chavuz yeshaf of two boys with mamish screaming and yelling at each other and learning. So the cardinal, they were dressed mamish in their goyish cardinal clothing, with the cross and everything, walking around the base medrash. So they tapped the boy on the shoulder. He said, why are you so mad about this? What are you yelling at him for? He said, because in our religion, everything has to be honest, and he's wrong, and I'm trying to set him straight. So the guy said, no, in our religion, we don't ask questions. We don't have these problems. We don't ask questions in Christianity. We don't ask questions. So this is not for us. But it's true, if you ever go to yeshiva, one of the beauties of being in yeshiva is you watch people, mamish, fight. They scream, and they yell, and they woo-ah, and then they close the gemaras, and they go to lunch together, and everyone's very happy. That's how you know that it's machlokes l'shem shemayim. If after you close the shul, you still don't talk to the guy, that's because you just want to think that you're right. If you ever been in yeshiva, these are some of the highlights of being in yeshiva, some of these screaming matches where guys get really angry and really upset. And then afterwards, everyone's best of friends. They go out together, and everyone moves back with life. That's how you know it's a machlokes l'shem shemayim. You're doing it because you really want to. You really think he's misunderstanding Pshat and Rashi. You think he's botching up the Rambam. But if you're just arguing, and this never happens sometimes in yeshivas also, you're just arguing to argue because you think you're right and everything is your way. So that's not a machlokes l'shem shemayim. But that's found in this week's parasha also. The Torah is reminding us that we have to have what's called a mechamto shel Torah. You're supposed to fight in learning. People think, oh, don't argue in learning. It's not socially correct. Just agree with your chavrusa. No, that's not right either. You're supposed to argue. That's what learning goes all about. That's why you have a chavrusa. They say about the Biruchim from the Mir. The Biruchim from the Mir used to take a chavrusa that was like a shtickle, not such a frum boy. So he says, why? He says, because the boy was so not frum that he would get so heated up in learning, he would sometimes attack a Biruchim. And Biruchim loved that, because that got the learning to be more exciting. He didn't want a boy who was just going to say yes, whatever you say, Rabbi, yeah, that's Pshat and Rashi, yes, that's. No one wants a yes man. You want someone who's going to get you going. So he said, Biruchim wanted a boy who would be a little bit more chutzpahdik. And he was like, what are you talking about? That's not Pshat. You don't know what you're talking about. And this way he can grow in learning. We don't grow in learning if someone just compliments everything we say. That's the beauty of Torah. That's the pepulish of Torah. It's often lost today. People think, it's not right to argue. It's not right. There's a way to do it respectfully. There's something called respectfully disagreeing and arguing respectfully. You don't have to throw stenders at each other. You don't have to throw tables at each other. But there should be that's what a kol Torah is. A kol Torah is people arguing and learning. You're walking to any of the yeshivas. It's really something beautiful to see. People really, really getting at it, screaming and learning because they take it personal. If you don't care about something, we all know we fight for things that we care about. If you don't really care what's Pshat and Rashi, you just don't care. Fine, your Pshat's right. Who cares? I'm only doing this just to pass the time. But if you really believe in this, this is your essence, this is your life, this is your mission in this world is to understand this Rashi, so you're going to fight for it to the end. So that's an important lesson that the Torah tells us about valuing Chashiva Satoru. What does it mean to Papula? So that's what we have a chance to do here Sunday morning. We get to fight things out over here. We get to yell. Hopefully we don't throw tables, but we scream and we yell and we fight because we care about what's the pshat. What does this mean? What does that mean? It means something. It's not just merely, lip service to say over the words of the Torah. Then we come to the Parsha of Parah Aduma. Parsha of Parah Aduma is the realization that we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's a hard pill for us to swallow. As human beings, we live in the Google world where everything has to make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, we just Google it and then it makes sense. Right? Doctors hate Google and rabbis hate Google. The doctors hate Google because people come to the doctor, they already know what they have. They Googled it and they're convinced that they have X, Y, and Z. The rabbis hate it because people mamish pass and shilas from Google. Talmud called me up. He said he thought he knew one thing. Then he Googled it. Now he doesn't know what the answer is. So he called me. What does I think? He probably should have called me before he went on Google, maybe. But okay. But we live in the world of you need to know. So when we come to something like Parah Aduma, where it doesn't make sense, we get very frustrated. But Parah Aduma is the example for the Torah that we don't understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not our job. It's not our purpose in this world to try to understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nor is it our mission. Nor will we understand the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We just have to accept that as the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu structured the world. So when tragedy strikes, whether it be personal or communal, it's very hard for us because we want to understand why. As a community, we are amidst of a tragedy that's taking place a little south from us in Norfolk, Virginia, where a wonderful Rebbe, wonderful Yid, went into the water to try to save a Talmud of his that was caught in dangerous water, and we still don't know where he is. He's still missing. And it's a tragedy. No one understands it. I know people who live in Virginia, they speak of him so highly as an amazing, wonderful Yid, a Marbitz Torah, teaches Tinegesh Shalais Rabbi, teaches, I think, third and fourth grade, special Yid, father of five. We don't know where his body is even. And people have a lot of questions. Why did this happen? How could this happen? Why did Hashem allow this to happen? It's not our job. When tragedy hits us, our job is to accept the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I think the Torah is giving us a very, very important ability to deal with tragedy. In the parasha of, we just started off with Adam ki yomis boel. So the Gemara says in Yevamis, Adam, Yisrael kuri Adam, vein Akum kuri Adam. Goyim are not called Adam. Only Yisrael is called Adam. That's why there's a shita that there's no tumas oil by a goy, because a goy is not called an Adam. So in the early 1900s, there was a very famous court case with Mendel Bayless. In Russia, Mendel Bayless was arrested under a blood libel that he killed a Christian child, and he was put on trial. So for his defense, there was a Yid named Reb Yaakov Maza. Today the family name is Meza, which is related to Jackie Mason. Okay, that's a shmuz for a different time. But in any case, it was a Yid Reb Yaakov Maza. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was an appointed rabbi by the Russian government, and he came to speak at the trial to defend him. He spoke for 8 hours long, with a small interruption in between. And in the middle of his 8-hour drasha, he said pshat on this pasuk. He says, what does it mean that the goyim are not called Adam? He said, because the word in Hebrew, the word Adam means man, but there's no plural to it. All the other words that refer to man have a plural to it. He says, Adam, there's no plural to it. There's a singular and plural all the same. He explained, because Jews, Klal Yisrael, were all one. If one Yid does something wrong, we're all there to help him. We're all there to be there for him. You don't have that by the goyim. If one guy Nebuch would be caught up in a riptide somewhere off the coast of California, you would not find the other guy from New York traveling to California to give up their job to spend time trying to find him. You don't find that like that by the guy. They don't have that type of connection. By Yisrael, you have that. By Yisrael, when one year is suffering, everyone feels their suffering. Everyone feels their pain. That was the argument that he made at the time of the case. And I think that's perhaps what the Torah is giving us, a coping mechanism. When we go through tragedy, you have to remember we're on Adam. We're not doing this alone. We're not like a bunch of individuals that are suffering. There's a community here. There are people that are reaching out to each other, that are helping each other. Right? They write that the Coast Guard wanted to give up the search a long time ago. But since they saw that the Jewish community was so involved, they decided to let it keep going. Because we showed how much we care. I know of a CEO here in New York who dropped everything that he was doing to go to Virginia to help in the rescue mission. I know Yidden that are doing things that they never met this fellow. The goyim don't do that. You're not going to find that in the goyim. The best you'll find is, you know, the big gvirish goyim, they'll give an $18 check because they think they solved the world. The big goyish gvirim, they'll donate a basketball court to a poor community. They think they're tzaddik. By us, we really care because we're an adam. We're one entity. So perhaps the Torah in this week's parasha is giving us not only the lesson, but perhaps the coping mechanism when we experience tragedy. And it doesn't really matter if it's communal or even private tragedy. Even when we go through private tragedy, people have nebuch tzaris in their own life. But remembering that we're an Adam, we're one entity. It's not, you're not doing anything alone. We have an unbelievable community of Klai Yisrael. Nothing is alone. We don't suffer alone. There's organizations for come out everything today. And it's a beautiful thing that we don't have to go through these things alone. We have people that are experienced and people that are giving their time, people that are willing to help, and it's something very special about Klal Yisrael. It's what makes us a special nation. Mika Amcha Yisrael. This is why we stand out, because we care for each other, we worry about each other, and we take care of each other. That's why Adam, the Goyim don't have it. The Goyim have, yeah, they'll start a GoFundMe page. It's always amazing. You watch how much they raise versus how much we raise. It takes them, you know, again, remember, how many more people do the Goyim reach out to? When a Goyish tragedy happens and they open up to the world and they raise whatever they raise, we raise that like in half the time with a quarter of the population. It's unbelievable. That's the idea of Klal Yisrael, because we're one. So maybe the Torah in this week's parasha is not only telling us about tragedy, the Torah is giving us perhaps the coping mechanism, the way we deal with tragedy, the way we manage tragedy is remembering Adam. As long as we remember that we're one, remember that we're one entity, we're not a bunch of individuals, and that's one way of dealing with tragedy. And then the Torah tells us another way of not only dealing with tragedy, but perhaps preventing tragedy. Pasuk says that after Aaron HaKohen died, the Goyim attacked Klal Yisrael. So Rashi says, what's the connection? Because after Aaron died, the Anani HaKavod was no longer there. So I saw a beautiful idea, is that we know Aaron HaKohen was the Ish Chesed, Avas Chesed. He wanted to make sure everyone got along. Aaron HaKohen's job was to make sure everyone, there was peace in the world. The moment Aaron died, people started fighting again. The moment we fight, that's when the Goyim attack us. Our greatest prevention of attack is being unified. The more we can stay unified, the more we can be one entity, the more we can be an Adam, and look at ourselves as one nation, that is a practical way of assuring that the Goyim don't attack us. The moment we allow us to be divided, we allow us to be separated, for whatever reason it may be, that's when the Goyim have a chance to attack us. So I think the Torah is giving us not only the lesson of tragedy, but the Torah is also giving us the coping mechanism, and even more than that, the preventative measure of how one could prevent such type of damage for happening for Klal Yisrael. Next Sunday, it's Shavuos B'Tammuz. So because it's Shavuos B'Tammuz, we're not going to have our regular Gemara Shir. We're going to do a special Shir. We're going to discuss the Shaila of Mayim Shein Lahem Soif. You know, this tragedy that happened in Virginia, Mr. Hashem, they should find the body, Bekarev, I hope, and we should only hear good news. But it does present an interesting halachic shaila that has been discussed in earlier literature, dating back to the times of the Gemara, through the Rishonim, and is relevant in the Holocaust, and even more so in the World Trade Center. What do you do with these types of shailas of aguna? What do you do with such a shaila where our body is never returned? What do you do with the case? Really, predominantly, we're going to be discussing the water, because the Gemara has a rule that Maim She'in Lam Soif, if you have a body of water that has no opening, there's no end to it, like this massive river, this ocean, so then we have to always presume that the person is still alive. So we're going to have to see if there's a halachic, what's the halachic literature, how it ties into the Holocaust. The Nebuch, I think it's very appropriate on Shavuos B'Tammuz to learn about Tzaras in Klal Yisrael. And these Tzaras happened a lot in Klal Yisrael. There's much literature written about Tzaras of women and Aguna. So B'lina, the next Sunday, we'll discuss that instead of the regular Gemara Sharon Shabbos. We'll B'lina, they're discussing that topic in Mezrat Hashem next Sunday. I have no doubt that Young Israel will properly advertise that and open it up to the public. If anyone else wants to come, I'm sure they'll make it well known for the Gansa community to come join us. Okay, in any case. Yeah, David. Yeah.
It's my father George. I think Sunday. I didn't know you were going to give a share next week.
We're definitely going to have a share next Sunday, Mr. Shem. Yeah, definitely going to have a share. Okay, we're holding over here, hopefully the last share on Hatofas Dam Bris. The following Sunday we'll move on to something else. We'll go back to the Gemara. But let's just finish up Hatofas Dam Bris. We're holding over here in the Sugya of when exactly is Hatofas Dam Bris required. So we have two categories of Jews. We have a gerush and his guy, and a katan shenayin lil mal. You have a child, a Jewish-born child that's born with already what looks like a bris milah. So then what do you do now? You can't do another bris. So then you maybe do a tavas dam bris. Then you have another category of a gerush and his guy. The guy already had a bris milah from a doctor. So what do you do now? So then there's another child to do if you do a tavas dam bris. So we spoke about all the other shitas we're showing, and we really want to just get into today is the Rambam shita. And then we'll come back to the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch. Zok the Rambam in Hilchos Mila number 1. Ger shenichnas lekahal Yisrael. A ger that joins the Jewish community, chayiv Mila tchila. He needs to have Mila first. So it sounds like from the Rambam, the first step is Mila. But v'imol kishahaya akum, let's say he already had a bris when he was not Jewish. Again, presumably, it wasn't a kosher bris, he wasn't Jewish. So then, tzarech l'hatav menu dam bris, b'yoyim shen nizgayer. Then he needs to do the tavas dam bris on the day that he becomes nizgayer. So the Achranim point out, you see there's a change in wording. When it comes to a ger, shenichnas l'kal Yisrael, a regular ger, he has to have a mila t'chila. Sounds like that's the first thing he has to have is a mila. Yet when it comes to the case of Tavas Dam Bris, then it just has to be a B'yayim Shin Nizgayer. So on the day that he becomes Jewish, he has to have it. What's the order? It sounds like it's not so important. It sounds like the order of Tavas Dam Bris is not as essential as the order of the Bris Mila. Because again, it says over here, Tchila. Why does it say Tchila? Tchila means the first thing he has to do is a Bris. And then when it says, it should say, V'mol kishay akam tzarek lat v'menu Dam Bris, Tchila. Doesn't say Tchila. Right, that means it's on the day. It doesn't say the first thing on the day. So the impression would be it's any time at the day. Meaning even after he already did Kabbalah Samitzvahs and after he went to the mikveh. As opposed to a regular ger, it sounds like it has to be tchil. Okay. Then the Rambam sheet is very clearly that a ger that's nisgayer, he needs to do the tavas dambris. V'chein, katan shenoylat kishuhumal. If you have a katan that's born who seems to already have a brismila, also tzarech lahatav menu dambris, b'yoyim hashmini. Fine. So the Rambam seems to put the two together. He seems to write, thank you, that a katan shenayel mol needs hatavas dam bris, as does a ger. Question is, why? Why does the Rambam hold both of these two people need to have hatavas dam bris? So we mentioned already from the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah learned, the reason for that is because we're choshish for arlo kvushim. We're choshish that maybe this baby that's noyel mol really has an arlo, it's just covered over. So that's why he has to have a bris. What about a ger? We're choshish for a ger that he also has arlo kvusha. Is that why a ger shen iskari has to have a bris mila? Because maybe he has arlo kvusha also. Maybe. So Kesef Mishnah thought not like that. What? That's right. We know he wasn't right. He had a regular ma'aseh mila. He went to the bris, so that can't be. So then it's weird. Why doesn't he have? One could have learned the Rambam that the Rambam sheet is like we mentioned from some rishonim. That the reason why you need a tavas dam bris is to become Jewish. You need a ma'aseh mila. So that's the ger. What about the Yisrael? Maybe like we mentioned from the Me'iri, that even a Yisrael, it also needs something to make him tachas kanfei hashchina. Even the Yisrael needs something to make him, we'll call, Jewish. So maybe that's why you need to have a Tavas Dambris. Not clear from the Rambam. There's one more Rambam that we need to see in Hilchas Milah.
Does the Havamina that an Oral was not Jewish?
Right, I would say right. The Oral also needs a procedure to make him what the Rishonim call Tachas Kanfei Hashchina, under Hashem's banner. Even though he was born Jewish, that should be enough. We mentioned that the Meiri thinks that's not enough. It's Machloikis Meiri in the Ramban. So there's one more Rambam that's irrelevant. Look, the Rambam. Ger Shemol Kodim Shenis Gayer. If you have a Ger, that's Mol. Before he got Jewish, we called them Shenoil Kishu Mol. Kishim Atifim Menu Dambris. When they do Atavas Dambris, Ein Tzrichim Brach. No Brach is required. So now that, this is a little troubling. Oh, well, why not? If Atavas Dambris is a supposed a replacement of Mila, then why shouldn't it have a Brach? So if you hold like the Kesef Mishnah, that the reason why we do Atavas Dambris is because maybe it's an Arla Kvusha, so that's a Suffolk. So if the whole reason why you're doing it is a Suffolk, so we have a rule, Suffolk Brachas Lahakal. But if you're learning not like that, if you're learning the reason why you need Atavas Dambris is because that is the replacement of the Bris, so the Chayri should have to... Right, so why should the replacement not get a Bracha?
Is it the replacement or is it the completion?
Good. Oh, good. So that's from Chaim's Lomnus already. We're going to see that it's... it might be the completion of the it might be two parts to the Mila. But if you assume not like that, well, let's assume like Rashi and Shabbos Kuf Lama Dalet, that there's a din b'fnei atzmo, we call that Tavas Dam Bris. Every Bris Mila, you need to have blood come out. He learns it from a Pasuk in Ovi, Pasuk in Zechariah. So that makes it a mitzvah d'rabbana maybe. Or we mentioned there's a Yushalmi, the Yushalmi learns it from a Pasuk, Himol, Yimol. So maybe that would make it a din d'araisa, or at least a din somewhat of requirements, so perhaps a bracha should be recited. But look at the end of the Rambam. Dr. Rambam, v'chein androgynous. When you give a bris milah to an androgynous, you don't make a bracha. Why? So here the Rambam says, the reason why you don't make a bracha, because it's suffolk. We'll see in a second, the Mishkanus Yankov makes the very important dig in this Rambam. When the Rambam explains why you don't make a bracha on Gerish and Eskayer, he doesn't say because it's a suffolk. He just says you don't make a bracha. He says, Einoi tzrichin bracha. Does it need a bracha? He doesn't say you don't make a bracha because you can't make a bracha. He says he doesn't need a bracha. So as Reb Yaakov Karliner makes this diuk, and it's a very nice diuk, that there's a difference between the case of Gerish and his Geyer and Katan Mol and Katan El Mol versus the Adroig in this case.
What did we learn before a few weeks ago when the Mol does the bris, does the bracha, everything's done, but he realizes he didn't really do it properly. He has to go back.
Right.
So he has to complete, so that's
going back for a hiddur mitzvah. That might be going back just for a hiddur mitzvah, depending on how extreme those strands are that he missed. So this Rambam seems to be saying that what? That Noilad Mol and Katan, there's no bracha. Doesn't say why. According to the Kesef Mishnah, he says the reason why there's no bracha is because you don't make a bracha on Suffolk. That doesn't sound so flowing in the Rambam. So we have two chidushim in Rambam.
Well, there's another deer you can make in the Rambam.
Yeah.
Because he uses the Ger Shemol Kodem. Mm-hmm. So he's saying he had a Mila.
Right.
Or Katan Shinola Keshehu Mohol. He was born that way. So he used the language of Mohol.
Right.
Of Mila. So he's obviously saying that the Mila has been done.
Right.
And now there's just something that needs to just circle.
Right, so the Rambam's putting Noilad Mol in the same category as Gerish and Hizgayir. Now, Gerish and Hizgayir is not an Erla Kavusha issue. Gerish and Hizgayir is because it's cut off. Noilad Mol is a perhaps. So if they're both going to work with a Tavas Dambris, so how does a Tavas Dambris work? It must be a procedure. It's a din. You have to have this X and Y procedure to complete the process. So the Rambam sheet is no bracha is recited. So the question is, Bishlama on the case of cut the Noilad Mol, there's no bracha because of Arla Kavusha. What about Gerish and Hizgayir? Gerish and Hizgayir, there's no Arla Kavusha there. It was cut off. The doctor said, I saw the case. I cut off the Mila in the hospital. I wasn't Jewish. It wasn't a Kashra Mila. There's no Arla Kavusha there. So why is there no bracha? I was talking to a friend of mine who's involved in Balei Tshuva and Gerim. He does college campus Kiruv in Arizona. So he told me that a lot of the Balei Tshuva today do a Tavad Dambris for them because they really have no idea if their Bris Mila was done properly. Yeah, these people, they're not... I had a bris. So who knows what you had? So he said he was once in a room with a convert. And the rabbi got up and said, I know there's only one Jew for sure in this room who's really Jewish. The convert. The rest of us, how do I know we're all Jewish? We assume we're Jewish, right? We're told our mother's Jewish. We have chazakah. He says, there's only one person in this room I know for sure is Jewish. This convert. We just made him Jewish. We know for sure he's Jewish. So he told me that a lot of the Balei Tshuva today, they do a Tavas Dambris for them. So I told him, I said, we're learning the lumnish part of a Tavas Dambris. You're doing the actual part of a Tavas Dambris. We talk about all the lumnish behind it. You're actually living this. How do you deal with these types of shailas? But it's interesting to think about. For a lot of the Balei Tshuva today, they talk our mak because they figure, what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? Do that again. Obviously, it's a medical procedure. Yeah, let them do Kabbalah Mitzvahs and let them do a Tevila. Takes This way, you know for sure that they're Jewish, because it's very hard today. He was telling me, he said, you'd be shocked though, you know, when they ask on college campuses if you're Jewish. So there's, you know, a lot of people think they're Jewish because their father's Jewish or their mother thought they were Jewish. He told me he was involved in a case. He was mamish. The guy was holding, about to get married. He was, thought he was convinced he was Jewish. His mother was never Jewish. A very depressing situation. So he told me they do a lot of gayrus today on college campus. But the problem is the funding is not for gayrus. The funding is for being makariv Jews. We're not looking to be makariv gayrus. But there's a big business today. A lot of these people, they think they're Jewish and they have a netiah towards Yiddishkeit. So they end up being makariv of them and they end up being makariv of them. So these shalos come up. What do you do with these types of fellows? Do you have toughest on bris? What do we do? So it isn't again halacha l'maaseh. Not that we're learning it halacha l'maaseh, but it's interesting to sometimes take a step back and realize these things are real shilas that people deal with on a constant basis. In any case, the Rambam sheet is that both need a toughest on bris, but both don't get a brach. So,
is it possible?
Yeah.
By the one, as the gentleman said, the gear or the katan who was already born. There's no suffix.
But the cotton has a suffix. Not a the ger has no suffix. The cotton still has a suffix. He might be an early kusha. The cotton still has a suffix. The gerish in this guy, there's no suffix. He was born and the hospital cut off the mila, so that's it. But the cotton, we still don't know. We're looking at the baby. He's 8 days old. We're examining the baby. We can't tell. Maybe it's really an early kusha. So then Rabbi Salvation asked this kasha. Why is it that a cotton, early mall, I understand why there's no bracha. Because it's suffix. But what about the ger? The ger should get a bracha. And the Rambam lumps the two together. The Rambam puts the two in the same category. It's very strange. How did the Rambam put these two people in the same category when they're really for different reasons?
Is it possible that bracha is only for bris as the Torah defines?
So that's what we're going to see. What exactly is the role of a tavas dam bris to figure out why you shouldn't get a bracha? Then there's one more Rambam. This is really what throws everything for the monkey wrench. Dr. Rambam, Menachas Trumas, Hanoilid, number 3 on the left corner. Hanoilid Mol. Let's say you have a baby that's Noilid Mol. Dr. Rambam, Oichel B'Trumah. He's allowed to eat truma. Okay? So, frak the achreinim, what do you mean he's allowed to eat truma? A noilid mol, the Rambam told me he has to do a tavas dam bris. Presumably, until you do a tavas dam bris, you're like an arul. The terrorist is an arul, is not allowed to eat truma. So, why did the Rambam write that someone who needs to have a tavas dam bris and did not yet have a tavas dam bris is allowed to eat truma? According to the Rambam, Lushitosoi, he's like an arul.
Maybe that's why he's making that. Like, and he uses the language later on. He goes, by the tumtum, Vineshahu suffic arul. So he's using the word arul and mahol differently.
That's right.
So maybe what he means to say by mahol is he could have said nola bali arul, whatever.
Right.
But he's not using that.
So how does the Rambam understand
nola? He holds that if it's physically gone, you are normal or whatever.
You could say you're not an arul.
You're not an arul.
Right. Good. So why do you have to?
So you have to. Good. You have to fix it.
So that's what we're going to have to say. So we're going to have to say some Torah that there's. We'll call this Reb Chaim's classical Torah that there's two dinim. There's a din in
physical presence.
Ahasara sa'arla, removing the arla. There's a din called a tavas dambris. That's two separate dinim. Now that goes against the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah told us that the reason why you have to do all this is because suffik arla kvusha. That doesn't work with the Rambam.
Why is a tumtum suffik arla? Isn't a tumtum both?
Tumtum is both.
Yeah, both. So you do a bris.
Wait, what's
that?
Do some sort of bris on the
air? No, tumtum is the ena oichem neshu suffik arla. Right. No, until you do something. Until you do something. Means in the status that he's in right now. Right. Maybe you think suffik, you go all the kula. Maybe it's some type of a suffik, you don't have to treat it seriously. Because we're going
to
see in a second, there's a Gemara in Yevamos that talks about suffik.
Right.
Because the Shitas HaRambam suffik is lakula. The Rambam Shitas suffik deraisa, deraisa is lakula. That's the Shitas HaRambam. So this is the kasha and the Velt has on the Rambam. So the Radvaz, I put it on last week's sheet, I didn't put it on this week's sheet. The Radvaz has a line over here where he says, even though the Rambam holds you need to do a tavas dam bris, einoi oral. He's still not an oral. So this is it's a very small comment, but it's a very loaded comment. What the Radvaz is really telling you is along this. He's saying that even though the Rambam is very clear that a tavas dam bris is required, it's not that the Rambam thinks that without a tavas dam bris you're an oral. It's just the Rambam holds is that we'd call it a davar tzedadi. It's a side thing. You have to do a tavas dam bris. It's on your to-do list. But it would not make the baby an oral. And therefore, since the baby is not an oral, he's allowed to eat truma.
But that's not the Mishkan. He holds it different. The Rambam believes it's a separate thing.
So we get to the right. The Mishnah Zakev doesn't say like that. The Lashon of the Radvaz is just Tambazay, that whatever status the Tavas Dam Bris is, that status doesn't make you an Oral. So the question is why not? So the simple answer would be is that the fact that the Rambam says you don't need a bracha of Tavas Dam Bris, that should give you the realization that Tavas Dam Bris is not really Mila. It's something else. So what is the something else? So let's see the Mishkan Yankov. Rabbi Yaakov Karliner. So the Mishkan Yankov writes alumnus, which is really Kamat found later on by Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim says a similar alumnus as well. So the Mishkan Yankov number 4 writes the following. Zok the Mishkan Yankov. He says, "Umashet tzarach lahatev min adam bris, haynu mishum da'atov adam bris gufo hu mitzvah b'fnei atzmoi." Zok the Mishkanes Yankiv. You know why you have to do the Tavas Dambris? Not like the Kesef Mishnah learned because of Suffolk or Lakvusha. That's not why you do a Tavas Dambris. You know why you have to do a Dambris? Because it's a mitzvah of Neatzmai. Rak. She'edim akevis le'inyan truma, but it does not stop you from eating truma. Why not? Says the Mishkan Zayin, kivish she'edim nekar arul. He's not called an arul. The chesiv, it says in the pasuk, v'chol arul lo yoyechol bo. It says an arul is not allowed to eat truma. V'garmina minei le truma. We learn that from truma. Oy mishum dechsev ishish l'rabbis is an arul. You have a special drasha that an arul is not allowed to eat truma, and you're not an arul. So, says Mishkan Zayin, the pshat in the Rambam is givaldik. The Rambam holds that atavis dambris is the din b'fnei atzma. It's a separate din. We'll see in a second where that's learned from, but I thought it was embraces a din on its own. Then, therefore, that's why he's not called an oral. Says the Mishkan Yankov, who told the Rambam this? So says the Mishkan Yankov, it's a Gemara in Yivamis. When his daddy law says, Tam Nochem Dvarov, to Isa be Yivamis, to Toysha, Vesachid, the Pesach, Osil, Asu Yeger, Shediskari, Marvel, Cotton, Shinoramol, Shinoramol, Vesav, Etzarch, Latin numbers. The Gemara makes the Joshua. That you have a case of a gerish and iskayer mol and a katan shenel gerish and iskayer and katan shenel mol, they're not allowed to eat from the current Pesach. So frek the mishkus yankov, I don't understand. I need a pasuk to tell me that someone who's a suffik oral is not allowed to eat truma. If pshat's like the kesef mishnah, that everything is just suffik, we don't know. So I need a pasuk in the Torah to tell me that a suffik is not allowed to eat truma. Luchayri kasha, atu itzich kol rebuye sveika. I need a pasuk in the Torah to teach you that a suffik is also given the kaimel to have a suffik arul kavusha. If you hold it's like the case of Mishnah, that a suffik arul kavusha do suffik arul gomer matzar kol the rabbi shlo yochal bePesach. Why do I need exeris a kasuk to tell me that a suffik arul is not allowed to eat karm Pesach? Of course he's not allowed to. He's a suffik. Suffik deraisa lechumrum. So we mentioned last week the kasha, but that's not true in the Rambam Shita. The Rambam holds suffik deraisa midaraisa is lekula. Machlokes Rambam in the Rajba. Rashba holds Safik Daraisa, Midaraisa is Lachumra. The Rambam himself holds not like that. The Rambam holds
always.
The Rambam holds always. Every Safik Daraisa, Midaraisa, we really go Lakula. It's only the Rabbanan who tell you go Lachumra. So this Kasha, the Mishkas Yankov, is not a Kasha on the Rambam. It's a Kasha on everyone else. He's asking it on the Rambam. It's a big Tzarachin. How can you ask this on the Rambam? He's asking that there's a Gemara in Yevamos that learns that every carbon Pesach, that an Oral, that's a Neulin Mol, and a Gerish Iskayer, they're not allowed to eat carbon Pesach. So Frek Mishkas Yankov, why don't I need a Pasuk for that? They're a suffik. They're a suffik arlo kvusha. They might be an arlo. They might be an arlo who needs to have a milah. So of course they're not allowed to eat karm Pesach. Why do we need a pasuk? Elamai says the Mishkan Yankov. Nearly the mekan hoitzei Rambam Dvarav. This is where the Rambam got his idea from. That why do we need a pasuk? Because it's not just suffik. Because there's a din bifnei atzmai called atavas dambris. And this pasuk is teaching me that without atavas dambris, you can't eat karm Pesach. So does the Mishkan
Yankov. Didn't the Rambam say you
can eat truma? That's the next kasha we're going to get to from the stipler. So according to the Mishkan Yankov, the Rambam looked into the Gemara and he saw from the Gemara that Atavas Dambris is a mitzvah tzadi. It's a separate mitzvah. But that mitzvah, learned from a pasuk, teaches me that I can't eat Karban Pesach. So frek the stipler. So why is it that there's one pasuk that tells me that Atavas Dambris prevents you from eating Karban Pesach, but the Rambam holds it doesn't prevent you from eating Truma? What's the difference? If Atavas Dambris is something that's essential for the process of becoming whatever you need to become, so why does the Rambam tell me that that's okay to eat Truma without it, but the Torah tells me I can't eat Karban Pesach without it?
Is there a pasuk by Truma that an oral can't eat Truma?
There's no pasuk.
But there is by Karban Pesach.
Well, there's a pasuk that an oral can't eat. But the question is this guy an oral? The Rambam's whole point is he's not really an oral. So if he's not really an oral, so
then
why
can't he eat Karban Pesach?
I can't, right, so why can't he eat Karban Pesach?
Well, where did the Rambam get his dip?
So says the stipler number 5. Says the stipler, Gevaldik Achilik. What's the difference between Karban Pesach and Truma? Why can a person who needs a Tavas Dambris, who's not an Oral, according to the Rambam, according to the Mishkas Yankov, he's not an Oral. He's not a Suffolk Oral, he's not an Oral at all. So why can't he eat Pesach, but he can't eat Truma?
That
says this.
Sense,
why?
Because Truma is just food that's going, otherwise we go to the Kohen.
Right.
But Karban Pesach, it commemorates the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim.
So therefore, so what do you have to have?
So you have to have a Tavas Dambris because you need to be under the Kanfei Ashrina in order to be b'mishtatev with the Karban Pesach. Because that's a communal thing versus the truma,
which is a kedusha thing.
Yeah,
and then truma is totally in a status, and this is totally in a different type of a status.
That's a nice idea.
Huh?
You eat truma.
An oral that would eat it would get, yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. So the stipler comes up with a nice chilak. The stipler says like this, number 5. He says, "Umayshna be Pesach this Rabbi Yisura. Why is it that by Karban Pesach there's exerts a kosev that he's not allowed, and by Truma he is allowed?" So he says, "The chilak pashid moid. The Truma asr Torah oral." Says, "What are you not allowed to do by Truma? An oral is not allowed to eat Truma. V'chol she'ino oral, anyone who doesn't have a status of oral, av b'shalei kai mitzvah se'shal tov damris. So again, this is the stipler really saying two dinim over here. There's being an oral, then there's doing a mitzvah called atavas damris. So once I'm no longer an oral, so I'm not in violation of kol oral lo yechal truma. I'm not an oral. I have to do atavas damris. Fine, I'll do atavas damris later. But I don't have the status of an oral. So by truma, it's very nice. I will be pesach aser hu mishum shalei kai mitzvah mila. Says the stipler, that's not the problem by Pesach. The rules of eating carbon Pesach are not totally in whether or not you're an oral or not an oral. It's totally in whether or not you did what you need to do with regard to the mitzvah of milah.
Where's that
said? Says the stipler, da'afilu milah zechara v'avodav ma'akva Pesach. If I have an eved that's supposed to have a milah, I'm not allowed to eat carbon Pesach until he gets his milah. Says the stipler, why is that? Afa pishu atzmi, no, I'm not an oral. I bought a new eved, so the halacha is you have to give your eved a bismillah. I didn't give him a bismillah yet. So I'm not allowed to eat carbon Pesach? What shaykhis? Elo says the stipler, shaloi kaya mitzvahs milas banava mutelas olav. The pshat is a person who did not yet do his job with regard to the mitzvah milah, whatever his job may be, whether it be an actual milah or whether it be atavas damris, you have to make sure that before you eat carbon Pesach, all milah related issues were taken care of.
Mitzvahs milah, he's learning it that
way. Well, I don't know if you have to call it.
He's learned that the Evan needs to be oralist.
Well, he's not that either.
Good.
No, he just.
No,
he just means that whatever you have to do for the mitzvah milah, whether it be actual milah or atavas damris, whatever is on your checklist to do, that has to get done before you can eat carbon Pesach. For Hachanami says this type of beautifully, but noilin mol ni sheina oral. You're right. Noil mol is not an oral. But the Torah doesn't care about oral over here. The Torah cares about is, did you do what you need to do?
That's why it's called a bris.
That's right.
So it's legabe korban Pesach. And he's not part of the bris.
That's right. Right, exactly. Right. That works with your with the pshat you were saying. That pasuk is by truma. That's by truma.
And by mila.
By mila, by korban pesach, he says. He says no such pasuk like that.
It says
it's more than that. It's not just anyone who doesn't have it, or else anyone who didn't do the mitzvah of mila.
So the definition of mila includes that toughest
down. Yes, on some level. Yeah, we're going to have to break that down in a second, right? It has to be, clearly. Because if atavas damris wasn't a chelik of mila, so I did all my mila job. Right. So clearly it's a chelik of the mila. We'll have to try to...
What's if there's no pasuk by Korban Pesach?
He's assuming that there's no din oral by Korban Pesach.
There was no pasuk there?
There's definitely a pasuk that talks about an oral, but it says but he proves that it can't just be that, because if I didn't give my eved in a bris, I'm also not allowed to Korban Pesach. That can't be because I'm an oral.
Chol or chol chobel means that he can't, the eved can't.
No, but I also can't. That's what he's saying. That's the halacha. That's the din. He's saying that's the din, and therefore he thinks that's the lumdus. That's a nice teretz from this type. There's one problem. If we accept the pshat of the Mishkan Siyankiv, we're left with a very strong question. Why is there no bracha on atavas damris? If you tell me now atavas damris is a chelik of the mila, it's a procedure, it's a part, whatever word you want to use, so why is there no bracha? It's hard to get a bracha. So the Mishkan Siyankiv himself, in number 6, bavorns this kasha. And he first of all he says, I'll bring you a ride to my pshat from the Lashon of the Rambam, number 6. Right? Again, the Mishkan Yankov is learning that Noilad Mol and Ger are not because of Safik, but Atavas Damris is a Dim Mifnei Atzim. So he says, I'll bring you a beautiful raya. He writes in number 6, Uperigimah Alacha Vavli Yim Bracha Kasev Degesh Nizgah Mol Vakot Nishon El Mol Keshem Ativim Imena Damris Ein Tzarech Bracha V'yachakach V'chein Adroiginis Ein Mivarchan Al Migla Asab Nishon Ezach Avadai Ubereisha, says the Mishkas Yankov, a dig I told you earlier, when it comes to the cut, and he doesn't say Lo Yiska Klaus Shu Safik, when the Rambam is telling you why there's no bracha by the case of Ger and cut, and he doesn't say because it's a Safik, he just says Einoi Tzrichim Bracha. Then when he gets to Adroigenes, there he writes, you know why there's no bracha? Because it's not a Zohar Vade. Says the Mishkas Yankov, why the change of terminology? Terry says, because it's a different lomdus.
Yeah.
Says the Mishkas Yankov, he says, El mils l'bshita she'im avarchem rak b'adroigenes kasev shusavik v'tayim k'meshik asavnu. U'biyana b'sugi divamis, t'loi kavu ha'chom e'bracha al mitzvah sa'atoves dambris bilvat. That one line, he's bavarning a kasha. So why taka, is there no bracha? So the Kesef Mishnah told us there's no bracha because you're only doing it because of Safik. But the Mishkas Yankov is not going like that. So why is there no bracha? So this line answers the question. Chazal never made a bracha on just Hatavas Dambris. We'll see why in a second. Then he goes weiter and he writes, V'ayim b'zayir HaKadosh, the muskur kamba pa'omim v'tikunim d'choshev gimel mitzvahs mila. There's three mitzvahs of mila. Mila, priya, v'atufei dhamma. Okay, according to Mishkas Yankov, Hatavas Dambris is a thing on its own. You gotta have a source for that. So we mentioned, I think it was right 2 weeks ago, we mentioned that you have a couple of places in Shas where there seems to be some form of a mention that Atavas Dambris is a thing on its own. We mentioned there's a Taisus in the Darim, there's a Rashi in Shabbos. So he writes over here from the Zoya, Harid the choshev atavas demris lemisvith neatzmoy. Chemash begmar the brayz. And then he quotes the gemara in Shabbos, which we saw together about the baby that they couldn't do a bris because the baby was green, and they said he can't even do atavas demris. And we pointed out that the Achronim say, you see from that Rashi, that a Tavad Amris is a thing on its own. Okay,
what's Priya?
Priya is the pulling back of the skin. That's another part of the procedure.
He gives it out of water.
Then. Yeah. He's just trying to let you know that they're all parts of the mitzvah milah. So for Reb Chaim in number 7, Reb Chaim...
Why is there a comparison to the androgynous that's a suffix? It's a suffix whether it's a male. It's not a suffix whether it's Gemal.
Right, but the point
it's
is...
It's a suffix. That,
right, but it would still be the final conclusion that you can't make a brach because of suffix. You're right, the suffix would be a different type of suffix. I don't disagree. But at the end of the day, both of them, if you were asked why is there no bracha, the answer is because they're both sveikis.
Maybe because it's a lesser, a lower level maisa.
What, which is?
Hatavas dam bris. So you don't necessarily associate a bracha with that.
So that's what we need to figure out. So if hatavas dam bris is the replacement of mila, then it's really strong kasha. If hatavas dam bris is a chelik of it, so then maybe it's not such a kasha. So let's see what Reb Chaim says. So Reb Chaim in number 7 has, I didn't photocopy the whole shtickle because he basically says the same word as the Mishkanos Yankiv, but then he leaves off. He says, "V'tzarachin." According to my pshat in the Rambam, like Mishkanos Yankiv, that it's not because of Safik. It's because of a din mifnei atzmoi. V'rak mitzvah mifnei atzmoi. Imken rehi mitzvah v'adoyis. It is a mitzvah. V'amai ein etzvichim bracha. Why is there no bracha? And Reb Chaim leaves off kasha, why is there no bracha? So the Mishkan's Yankiv seem to bavor in this kasha. He writes, there's no bracha, why? They never made a bracha for just that. Although it's a mitzvah, and it's important, it wasn't something that Chazal gave a bracha to. Doesn't really explain why. So Reb Chaim tells you to look at what he wrote in Hilcha Shechita. Reb Chaim is mitzayin to what he wrote in Hilcha Shechita. So if you look at number 8, this is from the Reb Chaim on Rambam in Hilcha Shechita. This Reb Chaim is on the Gemara. This Reb Chaim is Reb Chaim on the Rambam. So Reb Chaim writes in Hilchas Shechita the following comment. He writes, "Ukemoyshe pasa gam kein din benoylad mol shein nizgayer kishu mol the aim of our chal tavas dam bris av agav d'ladas ramam shom chiyuva hu vada v'loy misafik elo d'chol shein amitzah b'shleimus aim of our chal leha." So Reb Chaim alumnus, you know why there's no bracha on tavas dam bris? Because it's not the full mitzvah. So this sounds like from Reb Chaim that it's the two parts of the same mitzvah. This is going to be very, very relevant because we're going to see another Reb Chaim. I don't know about today or next time, where Reb Chaim seems to say that they're not two halves of the same mitzvah, but they're two separate mitzvahs. This Reb Chaim sounds like it's not the pshat that they're two separate mitzvahs, Mila and Atavas Dam Bris. What's the lashon of Reb Chaim? Right? It's not the mitzvah b'shleimusa, because the full mitzvah would be Mila and Hatafa. But over here, you only have a half of the mitzvah.
When in a normal bris,
blood comes out.
So I told myself drawing a blood.
Right. So we mentioned Rav Moshe has a tshuva, where someone came to Rav Moshe, they wanted to use a clamp that would cut the mila with no bleeding.
Right.
And Rav Moshe thought that's not right. Now we would have thought, what are you talking about, Rav Moshe? Hatavas dam bris is a replacement when you don't have a real mila. Here you have a real mila. The answer is no. Rav Moshe is assuming that hatavas dam bris is not merely a replacement of a mila. Okay. It's a thing on its own.
Yeah, but,
like the Mishkanos Yankiv said. Or chelik of the mila. Right,
but in a bris that was done for medical reasons, right? Like a ger before, right? There was blood.
Presumably.
So again,
but that was no good. That doesn't work. Hatavas dam bris has to be a kosher Hatavas dam bris.
But there was the removal of the orla was no good.
Right. And that's what that Hatavas dam
bris. Why are they focusing on Hatavas dam?
Because that Hatavas dam bris was also no good. We'll have to do a new one. We'll do a new one. We can't redo that. We have no choice. So orla week again. Why? This is a question that we never really answered. How exactly does Hatavas dam bris replace? The answer doesn't replace it. It's somehow it's symbolic, right? We mentioned that was that's what Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said. That's not blood. That blood from the bris is not regular blood that Reb Chaim couldn't stand. That was spiritual blood that was forming a bris. So if you can't get the actual, you get that toughest numbers. That's lechayra. So this is a very important Reb Chaim. There seems to be a steer. We'll develop this a little bit later. It might be a steer in Reb Chaim. Okay, so let's see. So we're holding now in a Rambam. We have a Geshmak at Rambam, where the Rambam holds you need to have a Tavas Dam Bris for both, but neither of them get a Bruch. So Rabbi Soloveitchik and Mishim Ashur Man Yevamis, he discusses this Rambam as well, number 9, and he writes like this, Mekosha. He has a different Kasha. I saw other Achronim ask this Kasha also. Why does the Rambam bring down the din of Ger in Hilchas Mila? It should really be in Hilchas Geirus. It's not a, obviously it's relevant to Mila, but it's really more of a Ger Sugya. Why does the Rambam bring it down in Hilchas Mila? So Soloveitchik asks number 9, Mikasha. Hari Rambam, Havi has a din de ger tzarech lomol, perik yud gim Hilchas Asuri Biyo. He brings down Hilchas Geirus. V'lo mehevi u'af be Hilchas Mila. Why does the Rambam bring it down again? Now, I can't claim to be an expert on Rambam when the Rambam does this or doesn't do this. I trust Rabbi Soloveitchik was, so he knows better than us. But it's strange. It's a Geirus issue. We're talking about a Geir. So write it in Hilchas Geirus. And the Rambam does write it in Hilchas Geirus. Why does the Rambam have to repeat it again in Hilchas Mila?
It's a straight repeat.
It's a repeat. The same thing. Why do you have to say the same thing twice? So he writes, Elo da Rambam Mila Sager Mahave Chi of Mitzvah Sager. Elamai, you see from the Rambam that the Rambam understood that the Mila Sager is a chelik of the Chi of Mitzvah Sager. Vein Arak Maaseh Geirus. And if you looked at Mila as just what you need to become Jewish, so then it's a Geirus Shail. However, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, clearly the Rambam understood that Mila is not just a Geirus Shail, it's a Mitzvah Shail. The Mitzvah's Mila is something that mutal on the Ger. Just like Mila is mutal on the father, and it's mutal on a Jew, it's an obligation on a Ger. A Ger needs to have a Bismila.
This is why we were talking about why anyone would make a bracha.
That's right, that's right. Right? Ve'ein Iraq Maisa Geirus, Umushamachi Havias Dina Bebez Mukaibis, because it's relevant to two places. It's the Geirat Hachas Geirus and the Geirat Hachas Mila. But this is the part I want. Ubechen Yitochen Deshitis Aram Misha Brocha Al Milas Hager. Now, maybe again, the question is why is there no Brocha by Atavas Dambris? Because the Ram holds the Brocha on Milas Hager, Hutunko Al Mitzvah Samila. That the Brocha is on the Mitzvah. Da Ager Mikayim. Voya Chalois Maisa Hageris Dibimila. Gavald Galumdis over here. So, as Rabbi Soloveitchik, think about it for a second. Why do you make a Brocha when you do a Mila on a Ger? So we spoke a little bit last week. Why does a ger ever need mila? Either because mila is a chelik of the gerus,
right.
The mila itself is a chelik of the gerus. Without the mila, I can't become Jewish. It's what makes me Jewish, or it's what we call the David study. Avada, you become Jewish with tefillah and kabbalas hamitzvahs, but there's a condition: you can't be Jewish if you're an oral. So you remove the orla, so you can become Jewish. So if you looked at it in those two ways, so then what would the bracha be on the mitzvah? The bracha is reflective of the mitzvah. So if the bracha, if it's a chelik of the maisa gerus, so then it's reflective of that in the bracha. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, if you understand that the ger is doing the mila because of the mitzvah element, not so much of the gerus element, ulechein ger shen isgar kishumol einem varch, he can't make a bracha. Denihi dematev dambris kedeshin isgar avadi, he's doing a tovas dambris. The tovas dambris mehave chelik maisa gerus is part of the gerus. Mikomokem einem mikayim mikach mitzvahs milas ager. He's still not doing the mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? To have ikia mitzvah lahasa b'sar orla shaloi. The mitzvah part is to remove the orla. So Rabbi Soloveitchik understood the bracha is reflective of the mitzvah. Not the how do I become Jewish. What's my mitzvah? My mitzvah is to remove an orla. I don't have an orla to remove. So if I can't make a bracha.
Yeah, but so by baby, the father has the mitzvah because the baby
right.
But can't have a mitzvah, so the father makes a bracha.
But what's the mitzvah there also? To remove an orla.
Right, but the ger, at what point does he become a Jew? He doesn't have the mitzvah until he becomes a Jew.
Right, so after...
So when is that, what comes first?
Right, one of those like bevasachas type of things.
Yeah, he's making the bracha,
yeah.
But at a moment, and it's over the asiyah, so
that's
before
right.
The meal even happens.
That's right.
He's making that I'm...
This is going to make him...
But I'm not chayev now, so how does he even make the bracha?
So this is, this is how he does it, after he does tefillah. So again, if you hold that tefillah is not...
You said, if he just is mekayim olmach l'shamayim and he's mekayim the Torah, so he should be a Jew, and then the meal is just sort of a thing.
Right, so if it's
so
a David,
that would be when he would become a ger, and then he would
that's
have
right,
the bris.
That's right.
But that's not how we do it.
So if it's a David study, it's not so shver. If you hold that the meal is a side problem, so then maybe. But if it's a chelik of what makes him Jewish, so that's it all happens at once.
If you hold it as part of the
Geirus.
Right.
He's going on like that. He's in the Rambam holds not like that.
Yeah.
He's assuming.
And you should be able to say it. Okay, so you say it over.
He's saying even if it is a chelik, but again, the full mitzvah and its completion. This is a shtickle like Reb Chaim was saying. The full mitzvah is to remove an orla that you don't have, so you can't make a brach on it. I'll still need to do a tavas. Yes, I'll need to do a tavas dambris either to make me Jewish or to make me not an orla, whatever I'm going to be doing. But the tzivoy Hakadosh Baruch Hu was to remove an orla that you don't have.
Until he does tefillah, he's not Jewish.
Right, right. So I guess he'll do it after tefillah and after kabbalas mitzvahs.
Isn't this a kasha?
Yeah,
in the room that
it's nobody's... No, it's a practical. I forgot. You have to look in Shulchan Aruch. I looked it up last week. I forgot already how they do it. What exactly is the seder hadvarim? How they go through the gerus process?
Maybe he should have the bris and then make the bracha on hatafas dam after he's had the bris and done the tefillah, because then he's a Jew. And now he's just sort of...
Right, but again, according to this lundus, he's still never going to make a bracha on that tafah. Again, a regular Jewish baby's not going to make a bracha on that tafah, according to my salvation's understanding, because that tafah is not the mitzvah.
No, because he was born into Kafir.
Again, Rabbi Soloveitchik's not going that direction. That's where I wanted to learn the Rambam. Rabbi Soloveitchik's time is looking at, if you look, what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is removing an arla. That's when Chazal made a bracha. You're not removing an arla. What are you doing? Whatever you're doing, you'll do it. Call whatever you want. But that's not the mitzvah on its own. pre-Yitzchak was Reb Yitzchak Blazer. Reb Yitzchak Blazer was also known as Reb Yitzchak Petterberger. Why was he called Reb Yitzchak Petterberger? Because he was a Rav in St. Petersburg, the Rav in Russia. He was a Talmud Muvik from Reb Yisrael Salanter. Reb Yisrael Salanter pushed him into the Rabbanis. He used to be the Reish Koil in the Kovna Koil, which ended up being the Slabotka Koil. That was a very chash of a Koil. And then he ended up becoming a Rav in St. Petersburg, and then he ultimately moved to Eretz Yisrael. He died in Eretz Yisrael in 1907. They say some Gvaldika Meisach about Reb Yitzchak Blazer. They say that he was very machmen in Elul not to talk. So the only time he ever talked in Elul was his wife had a baby in Elul, and he wished her Mazel Tov. So I told the story over to my wife. I told the story over to my wife. She didn't exactly appreciate the story so much. So as I say about Yitzchak Blazer, he didn't say at all. He didn't talk the whole Elul, except he had a baby girl in Elul, and wished his wife Mazel Tov. So they say that Reb Chaim Berlin, who was the Netziv's son, Reb Chaim Berlin had a tzava from Reb Yitzchak Blazer that he doesn't want any hespedim at his levaya. That Reb Yitzchak Blazer doesn't want any hespedim at his levaya. So they went to ask Reb Shmuel Salant, who was the gadol hador in Eretz Yisrael, can we follow? He said, you have to follow his tzava. So they came. Reb Chaim Berlin had a dream, and he came to him. Reb Yitzchak Petterberger came to him in a dream, and he said, Reb Yitzchak, tell me what's it like in Shemayim. He said, I want you to know that they dan very heavily on Shmir Saloshin, and he was very makban at Shmir Saloshin. He didn't talk the whole Elul. And he said, I want everyone to know, they're very makbid on how you talk, and be careful, because they down you very strongly in Olam Emes on Shemir Saloshin. That was the message he gave over to Reb Chaim Berlin. They say that Reb Yitzchak, he was such an honor of Reb Yitzchak Petterberger, that when he wrote his Sefer, the Sefer that we have over here, Pri Yitzchak, it's Shas and Chuvis, he only got haskamas from Rabbanim who didn't know him. He was afraid if he got haskamas from Rabbanim who know him, they'd all write nice things about him, because we're neighboring Rabbanim, you know, pass the buck around, you know, you say nice things about me. He sent it all the way to the middle of nowhere. Rabbanim who never heard of him, so they couldn't write anything more than just what the Sefer says. But they say that when his Sefer came out, so the Beis HaLevi was in his town, the Beis HaLevi came to visit, and the Beis HaLevi gave a shir. And the Beis HaLevi asked Akasha, and he turned to the rabbi, he said, you new rabbi, what do you think about it? And he didn't say anything, he kept quiet. And after the shir, the Beis HaLevi thought that he's Mamash and Amaretz, this guy. Everyone makes a big deal about Reb Yitzchak Petterberger. I asked the Kasha, I threw out it. He doesn't know anything. Then he opened up the Sefer. He saw that the Kasha was in his Sefer with his Terutzim. Everything was ready in his Sefer Pri Yitzchak. He didn't want to say anything. He kept his mouth shut. He didn't want to show off to anyone. He was a big, big under of Reb Yitzchak Blazer. He was people look at him in the world of Musa, because he wrote up a lot of Reb Yisrael Salanter's Torah on Musa. So people look at Reb Yitzchak Blazer as a Musa person, which he was. He was a big Talmud Chacham also. He was a big guy. He was a Rav for many years. So he has a Sefer called Pri Yitzchak. And in the Sefer Pri Yitzchak, he writes that a different shot in the Rambam. This pshat I find a little hard to understand, but he writes it nonetheless. He says like this. We mentioned a few weeks ago there's a shita of the Baal HaItter. The Baal HaItter discussed the chilek between a baby-born mahol and a guy-born mahol. It's an interesting distinction. If you have a Jewish baby-born mahol, or if you have a guy that was Neulad mahol. So he writes it this. Number 10. Says the Reb Yitzchak Blazer. Vare akoponim. Hare akoponim is more b'divir abal iter. Dover chiddish. Te'ikr achshah she or l'kvush. Afilu mandam avade or l'kvushi. Shaykh rach b'kotin. Avo godol lek or l'kvush. He has this creative idea that or l'kvush is only when you're looking at a baby right now. You have an 8-day-old baby in front of you. You say to yourself, or l'kvush. But if I have a 25-year-old, and I say to myself, well, maybe it was an or l'kvush. No, we don't do that. Or l'kvush is only for babies, not for adults. I mean, maybe it's covered up in a way that there's really an Arlo there, we just can't see it. So if you have a 25-year-old who strolls in and says, I think I was gemalt as a baby, or I think I was Neulad Mahol, they say, well, how old are you now? You're 25, forget it. We don't no chashash or l'kvush. Okay. He doesn't really explain why he thinks. So why is it different than the baby?
No, meaning a baby is born, you're there at the time. Everybody right. Knows what's going on. At age 25, we don't know what's going on. So we say rogue people who are like this, the Arba looks like this, they had some kind of a bris. Not that they were born...
Maybe. He doesn't explain. He doesn't explain. In the piece, he never gives any lumdus to why it should be this way. I'm not sure the difference is.
But it makes a lot of sense.
Why? Why is there a rife? We have
more
no idea.
More people were somehow gemal as opposed to born...
No, let's say the baby, this adult was born, Neulad Mahol.
It can happen, but more people that present themselves at age 30
I don't think we're doubting. I don't think we're denying the metzias. I don't think we're arguing that he's not an elmal. The question is, do you have to be choshish for it? If there's such a medical metzias, so why are we not choshish for it?
Isn't he saying if it's a 25-year-old comes to you and we say,
there's no meal there.
And there's no...
The Baal HaItter was talking about a case of a ger shenis geyer Neulad Mahol. I mean, the baby was born, the doctor said he's Neulad Mahol, whatever that means. And now he grows up, he's 25.
Okay.
That's what it sounds like to me. So the Rabbi Yitzchak Blasi gives the following idea. He said, "Lefize, you can make a kimta in the Rambam. I think it's a bigger kimta." He says, "Lechenu is daiti liyashiv divrei a brisa by Rambam al piu bal iter hanal the ikach shasha or lekvusha who rak bekotan avu begodol leka or lekvusha klal lefize nicha shaper the habrisa mayri begodol shenoylad mol v'leitifu menadam bris." We're talking about a godol that was noylad mol, a Jew, but we never get around to giving him a bris till he's now in a godol. So now there's no or lekvusha chashas anymore, which is so strange because he was born. And Arlo Kvusha, we never got around to the bris. Now he's 25, we say, oh, Arlo Kvusha's out. I don't really understand it. Achenasa Godel, the Shuvleka Arlo Kvusha, Ulchein, Echel Betruma. That's why he's allowed to eat Truma. That's Pshan in the Rambam, and Echel Trumas. The Rambam, and Echel Trumas was talking about a Neulen Mall, not a baby Neulen Mall. They're talking about an adult Neulen Mall. An adult Neulen Mall, he's talking allowed to eat Truma, because there's no Arlo Kvusha. That's Yitzchak Blaz's Pshat in this Rambam. Doesn't seem to be the simple way we would have understood the Rambam, but that's his Pshat. One more Pshat from Rabbi Soloveitchik. Rabbi Soloveitchik goes back and says, let's try to learn the Rambam like the Kesef Mishnah. Now this is a real doozy. Again, the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah learned, everything is Suffolk. So, the Rambam learned everything is Suffolk. So according to the Kesef Mishnah, it's a Suffolk or Lekfusha. What do you say about Gersh and his Gaya? What about Gersh and his Gaya? There's no Suffolk or Lekfusha there. It was cut off by the doctor. What's the Gersh and his Gaya? Says Rabbi Soloveitchik number 11, Oh, you talk Lefarish, Kidipirish, Bekesef Mishnah. The Rambam Savar, Sheyesh Eza Hashvo Ben Kotan Noyla Kishumol, Ben Gersh and Gaya Kishumol. The Rambam makes some form of similarity between Noyla Mol and Gersh and Gaya. Mishum, the Sfirule Shechal Bekotan Chalois Shem Oral, Machmas Hachshash the Shem Yesh Ba Orla Kvusha. Bidin Vadai Veloy Rak Bisafik. That's again a loaded comment in Lundus. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, when you have a chash or a kvusha, what did that do? That creates now whatever you have on your body has a shame oral. You now have a shame oral. Because there's a possibility that that might be real oral, so you now have a status of an oral. The shechal bekotan chaloy shame oral, machmas achshash shem yesh bekvusha. V'din vadai. Because of a possibility, we now look at the skin as an oral. V'shitas haramim shemol anoisi b'li bracha, mishom shemekayim v'mitzvah mila she'ina shleima. Because you're not doing a full mitzvah, like Reb Chaim said. Shereli chotchan es ora orla. U'mila lahasi shem oral da'alma eina mila gemur. That's not a full mila. It's not a full mitzvah. This is mamas like Reb Chaim. What about a ger? Why don't you make a bracha? Because you're not actually cutting the orla. What Rabbi Soloveitchik is really saying is what Reb Chaim was alluding to in Hilchos Shechita. That the reason why you make a bracha is when you do the real full ma'aseh mila. What's the full ma'aseh mila? Cutting off an oral. You're not cutting off. There's no foreskin to cut off. So when there's no foreskin being cut off, then there's no bracha.
Why?
No, because it's a wide...
Okay, it's a wide
was an essay.
Rabbi Yitzchak Blasi says that. You get to the same question. I understand why you don't say that bracha.
Right, so he's assuming that if you, again, so this is all if you assume HaTavah Zemir, this is a chilek of the mitzvah. If it's a mitzvah b'fnei atzma, then it's a kasha. So now we got to get to what we were supposed to talk about 5 weeks ago. We got sidetracked for 5 weeks, believe it or not. Is a Ramon Shulchan Aruch number 12. Zokter Ramah, very important Ramah. Mechabe writes in Hilchas Mila, Ein molin at shetenei secham. You don't do a bris mila until it's sunrise. B'yei mashmini leidos in the eighth day of the baby's birth. Umishallah Marashach, if Bidiyevi did a bris after Alois Hashach, Yatz. The Cholayim Kashal Mili could do Bismillah the whole day. Elish is reason, Magdim Lemitzis, we try to do the Bismillah right away. We spoke a lot about what happens if you have two babies and which baby goes first. The Dvar of Rom, we talked all about that previous Shur. Umalim Yad Babaik, we do the Bismillah right away. Afilu Mila Shabazmana, Eina Elabiye. Fine. Zakhtar Ramah, Hagah. Avar Umal Belaila. What happens if the Mile got things messed up and he did the Bismillah at night? Says the Ramah, Tzarech Lachzul Hatif Menu Dambris. You have to go back and do Atavas Dambris. What's the logic behind that? So the logic would be is that you did an incorrect bris mila, you got to fix it. So Atavas Dambris is the fixing up of incorrect bris milas. Fine. Malu Toich Shmoina Ubiyoim. What happens if the Moel didn't get the night or day wrong? He got the day wrong. It was during the day, but it was day 5. So Akhtar Ramah Yotza. Yotza the bris mila. What does that mean, Yotza? Presumably, you don't need Atavas Dambris. Fractataz, what's the difference? Mila Balaila is puzzle, Mila Techshmain is puzzle. So if it's a Mila Psula, they both should need a Tavas Dambris. And if neither, and if you hold that a Mila Psula needs a Tavas Dambris, both need a Tavas Dambris. And if you hold a Mila Psula doesn't need a Tavas Dambris, neither of them should need a Tavas Dambris. Fractataz, what is the difference between a Mila Techshmain and a Mila Balaila? They both seem to be no good. So that's what we need to get to, Mirza Shem. In 2 weeks from now, two Sundays, we'll get back into this Shaila. We'll try to understand. But Lina Edda, we'll get back into the Shaila of what's the difference between a Mila Psula.